Joined in the studio now, I'm Chad Lampe with Todd Hatton, your Morning Edition host, who's speaking with Mike Manning, the Chief Ranger, and the Park Superintendent Brian McCutcheon of Fort Donelson in Dover, Tennessee.
And they're here to talk about what is going on at Fort Donelson National Battlefield Park this summer. And I suppose, for the benefit of people who may not be entirely familiar with it, can either one of you gentlemen get us give us an overview of what Fort Donelson is, was, and what it means?
Mike, why don't you give an overview of the importance of the battle?
Okay. Well, in the first couple of years of the Civil War, the Union Army was having some real difficulties making any real inroads on the South. In the Western Theater, they appeared to be starting to have some better luck. One of the big things in the West was there weren't very many railroads, but there were a lot of rivers, and rivers became the highways that were the main part of having any sort of advancements into the South. Three big ones we can think of would be the Mississippi, the Tennessee, and the Cumberland. All went from north. They flowed south to north, but they also gave a real good line into the southern states, especially Tennessee. The Confederates had pretty well fortified the Mississippi River at Columbus, Belmont, Kentucky, but then they. So the Union Army, the intention was to go ahead and try to bypass Columbus and take the Tennessee and the Cumberland Rivers. Well, in early February of 1862, General Halleck, who was the commander of the West of the Union Army, at least in this area, he authorized General Grant to come down and move against Fort Henry. So they included a flotilla, a naval flotilla of the city class gunboats, which were fairly revolutionary at the time. They were actually used before the Monitor and the Merrimack had their battle. They actually fought. This force came up the Tennessee River, attacked Fort Henry, which is now in the land between the lakes. It's actually underneath the Tennessee River. When they made Kentucky Lake and they dammed it up, they flooded Fort Henry. Although some of the earthworks still of the outer defenses still exist. Mm-hmm. On February 6th, they attacked the Navy attacked Fort Henry, while the Army was still trying to slog through the mud down through the east side of the river. Confederates, realizing it was untenable, they built the fort in a bad spot. It was too low, too close to the water. It was flooded. The fort was pretty much underwater by that time. And they quickly surrendered. Kentucky, under the name of Floyd Tillman, was the commander at that time. He surrendered the fort, and they evacuated their troops from Fort Henry back across the Tennessee Ridge over Fort Donelson. Grant's army comes in and occupies Fort Henry. They move across over the next week or so, move across the Tennessee Ridge, up the Telegraph Road, the Ridge Road, and approach Fort Donelson, which was on the Cumberland River. They tried to use the same tactic. They brought the Navy up the Cumberland River to attack Fort Donelson from the water as the Union Army approached from land side. The Union Navy approached on the 13th. A few shots were exchanged between the USS Carondelet and Fort Donelson. On the 14th, the Navy made a full-scale attack on the fort, on the lower water batteries. Some of your listeners may have already been to Fort Donelson and realized where that area was. The battle, the Union Army was not nearly as, the Union Navy was not nearly as successful at Fort Donelson. The gunboats were unarmored at the top. Although they were ironclad, they were not armored out of the top. And Fort Donelson sat a lot higher off the river than Fort Henry. So they lost. The ships were heavily damaged, and they went flowed back down the river. Same time this is going on, the Union Army is surrounding the fort, and eventually the Confederates attempt to break out and attack out the left flank through the town of Dover and sweep the Union Army back. For some unexplained reason, they'd opened up their escape route, which was down the Forge Road towards Charlotte and Nashville. For some reason, they all went back into the trenches, and they stayed there, and the Union Army reoccupied their positions. And on the 15th, the Confederate Army surrendered.
Yeah, senior U.S. Army historian Kendall Gottes described it as where Ulysses S. Grant not only made his career, but kicked in the front door of the Confederacy. And, of course, that is the first in the dominoes to fall that end up at Vicksburg, which is the sesquicentennial of that is next month. But what there are a whole host of new things going on at Fort Donelson this summer, particularly with what I think is very interesting, the new museum that the work is starting on that. Is that correct?
It is. This coming Friday will be the day that we, at the end, close of business, that we, forever close the museum mm-hmm. as it has been for the past 51 years, and over the next 2 months retrofit it to get ready for all new exhibits. Cut through of a gunboat, people can better understand the ironclads that Mike had spoken of, cut through of the earthworks to better understand their construction, their significance, but also the effects on the local regional populations, and hopefully make it even more personable.
I know that one of the things that you wanted to discuss was reconnecting with the larger community, not only Dover, but certainly Western Kentucky, Northwestern Tennessee, bringing them in. And if I understand you correctly, the new exhibits for the museum is part of that process. What else is available at Fort Donelson to bring people to the park?
Well, Fort Donelson's comprised of multiple units, the core, the majority of the 1,067 acres being in and around Fort Dover. You go to Fort Donelson today, there's over 5 miles of earthworks or rifle pits, over 800 acres just in the Dover area with new land acquisition and so forth. But the visitor center, again, the museum, it'll be 3 months before it reopens with the new exhibits. But the film, the Surrender House or the Dover Hotel, the water battery that Mike spoke of is just breathtaking to understand the power of such a strategic position. Mm-hmm. But there's quite a bit. But over here in Callaway County, we have our Fort Hyman unit, which is approximately 170 acres, give or take. And there's been a lot of emphasis on that by my predecessor, Steve McCoy. But we've also been putting a lot of focus back in the Dover area with our new acquisitions. But we're returning to Fort Hyman with an interpretive kiosk, not kiosk, but an interpretive structure being built this summer, which will have additional waysides and the like. There's a restroom facility out there now, which for such an isolated area is a big thing.
Yes, it is.
and so with that, between what's occurring with the museum, a new film, which is just in the beginning stages for the Dover Hotel.
Really?
Yes, it'll be the first one since the late 70s.
Well, I have to say, the original film had some amazing facial hair. That was really remarkable.
We're trying to get the same person to do Buckner's, to do his mustache for us as was in the last one.
Yes. It's going to be a big step forward. And again, the movement to work with the community on Fort Hyman and bring more attention and visitation to that area, too, will be a big step.
Is there anything – what's next in the long-range planning for Fort Hyman? I know it's a remarkable area, beautiful area, and still yet much to be done.
Well, the next step in the long-range planning is actually sitting down with the public, with the Park Service, and coming up with a long-range plan.
Mm.
We have the land acquisition and so forth. There's still some technical stuff we work out on other issues, but it's just moving forward on. We have this amazing resource, Union and Confederate Fort, but working with other entities such as TVA, the local community, and so forth, and just coming up with a plan on how best to interpret it and preserve it.
Is there anything in the works for the National Cemetery?
Well, actually, there's a great project. I'll let Mike address that.
Yeah, one of the wonderful things about a National Cemetery. You got to remember, in the National Cemetery process, originally they were established for Civil War dead mm-hmm. and Union dead, to be absolutely blunt. And after the war, they brought the bodies, the vast majority of them unknown, and buried them in these very nicely decorated national cemeteries. This is just nation, you know, everywhere all over the eastern United States. The problem they ran into was later on, after World War I, they had a lot of American dead, mm-hmm. and they began burying them again into the national cemeteries that had been established for Civil War dead. They had to develop landscaping plans for these cemeteries to maintain their historic character, yet still find place to put newer veterans mm-hmm. from the later wars. What we've done is we've selected a time period of the 1940s, the last really known historic plan of Fort Donelson National Cemetery, and we're going to replant the trees that were there. The trees over the years have either died, were replaced to provide more grave space, because Fort Donelson for new graves is closed. We aren't allowing any new internments in there that aren't already either A, reserved, which we stopped taking reservations 10, 15 years ago, and spouses are buried on top of their veteran or what was their first. And we're replanting 93 trees into the cemetery, and we're also going to the star will be the reestablishment of the Cannon Monument, which is kind of a traditional thing that most Civil War National Cemeteries will have a cannon on its end in the ground with a plaque on there establishing it as a officially United States National Cemetery, and we're going to reestablish that as well.
It is beautiful out there, and I know. I mean, I've seen myself the veterans from almost every war, the Spanish American War, World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam. Absolutely beautiful place to be.
That's right. It's so peaceful. We had our luminary a little over a week ago where we. Put a lighted candle on each grave site, as well as we add extra candles out there for the Confederate dead who were killed in the Battle of Fort Donelson. And it's at night. And it lights up those white headstones. It's such an eerie, beautiful, beautiful experience.
Well, I know that just prior to the sesquicentennial of the Battle of Fort Donelson, there was land transferred from the Civil War Trust over to the park that sits, I believe, just on the west side of the old property line. Is there any more property acquisition in the works for Fort Donelson?
Well, actually, there are actually quite a few parcels that have been transferred over to the National Park Service that we basically purchased from the Civil War Trust. We actually own the majority area where the Confederate breakout I mentioned earlier before, where most of the heaviest fighting in the battle was actually in private hands for all these years, and it didn't belong to the National Park Service. Civil War Trust came back in the early 2000s, purchased the property where the Confederate breakout was. They also, as the Union Army retreated, there was also a point where we believe Ulysses S. Grant met his army because he was meeting with Admiral Foote that morning that the Confederates attacked, and he met them on the Winds Ferry Road at a location we believe, and we own all that parcel of land where that took place. So we have where the Confederates broke out to where the Union Army stopped and began their counterattack back towards the Confederacy, and we also own the area of Aaron Hollow, which is where Colonel Brown attacked. Up there that morning to attack the backside of the Union line, and so that was pure battlefield land. We now own that, and there are some other smaller parcels that we own as well that just kind of complete the story.
And now begins the progress, much like Fort Hyman, where we need to look at a long range plan,
right.
How best to interpret, how best to mark, how best to preserve.
And of course, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the Eagles.
Everybody loves our Eagles, and we're proud of them too. And sadly, there were no offspring this year.
Really,
it's been a peculiar is the best way I can say it. We've had every theory that they're divorcing to whatnot. There's been other Eagles, you know, coming to the nest. It's been just very disturbing. But they're starting to be seen again as a couple more often than they have been in the past 2 months. But the lack of offspring this year has definitely been a disappointment to many.
I hate to hear that, because I know I was up there a couple of years ago and saw two little brown heads that were in that area. Absolutely. It was really impressive to see, especially when I don't know if it was mom or dad went to go to the quote-unquote grocery in the Cumberland River. And when the eagle just spread its wings, it was absolutely inspiring sight.
Well, we had eight successful years before we had this. So there you have 16, because most years have been two.
Right.
So we've had at least 16 new bald eagles brought into nature.
But certainly that shouldn't stop anybody from coming to see the Eagles that are already there.
No. It's wonderful. I mean, and we're a history park. We're a cultural landscape, but at the same time, the cultural landscape is comprised of a natural environment.
Mm-hmm. And kind of a tongue-in-cheek comment would be that the best way to see an eagle is to attend one of our interpretive programs, because as soon as we have a crowd of people we're trying to talk about the battle, the eagles will show up to steal the show. That's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but that's kind of the way it seems to be working.
Well, you kind of get the whole experience.
Exactly.
So that all of that is, what, is there anything else that's on the horizon for Fort Donelson?
Well, I think one thing that I need to mention as we devote more attention to Fort Hyman and how to plan ahead is next year, the fall of next year, will be the 150th anniversary of Nathan Bedford Forrest's occupation of Fort Hyman and the taking of boats and so forth and then working the way down to New Johnsonville. So we're going to be working with New Johnsonville State Park, our state historic site, on formulating a plan of recognizing that together. And then lastly, the one thing is it's one of those we'll believe it when we get the money, but we've been promised that next year our 51-year-old National Park Visitor Center, while it's technically handicap accessible, it's very inconvenient. And there will be the addition of an elevator to all three respective levels, an addition to the west, which would allow for large, spacious, nothing ornate, but at the same time fully functional, accessible restrooms, and a variety of other upgrades that, for a 21st century national park, the public would expect.
So there is no excuse. All of the barriers will have been removed to coming and enjoying this beautiful piece of ground in Northwest Tennessee, Fort Donelson National Battlefield, and of course Fort Hyman in Western Kentucky, in our own Callaway County. There's no excuse not to come and really appreciate what it has to offer and the significance of what happened there.
Exactly. Both places, especially Fort Donelson, changed the direction of American history, changed the direction of the Civil War, but so much more. And we just encourage everybody to come out, visit, enjoy. And as I shared when you had me on 6 months ago, I mean, if anybody has any questions or comments from me directly, I can easily be reached at 931-232-5348. Extension 105. I'd just love to hear what the public's thinking.
Fantastic. Chief Ranger Mike Manning and Superintendent Brian McCutcheon, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.